Welcome to the A-Dub Club, a podcast about sci-fi, fantasy, technology, pop culture, the internet, and general nerdery. There are three things that are important to know. One, we occasionally use swear words, but try to stay in the range of PG-13, or at least the kind of R that cool parents are fine with. Two, we may talk spoilers. In this particular episode, we briefly discuss Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings, Game of Thrones, Avatar The Last Airbender, It Follows, and Star Wars, so be warned. And finally, three, apparently pet rabbits are against the law in one part of Australia, unless you are using it for magic purposes. With that out of the way, welcome to the clubhouse. We have snacks. Welcome to the A-Dub Club. My name is Andrew Whipple.
I'm Alex Wade.
And this is the third quarantine cast that we have done while we are stuck in our respective apartments.
Woo!
A true socially distant podcast.
Oh my God. I mean, this is what we'd be doing anyway.
Exactly. We were ahead of the curve. I think we made the same exact joke on the first one, but it doesn't matter. Time has no meaning. Everything is a chaotic nightmare. How are you handling our awful new world order?
I was doing good for the first couple of weeks, and now it's getting real old. Real quick, and I am ready to go do something.
Mm-hmm. I fully agree, and the degree to which I talk to my cat has become maybe a little bit concerning. but that's not what we're here to. Well, hey, talking cats might actually be more relevant than not to the kinds of things that we are talking about today. Today's question that we're going to discuss on this podcast, brought to you by listeners like you, is why tell a story with magic?
Yes, indeed.
Why would you ever do such a thing? How could you do that to me, Alex Wade? Tell a story with magic.
I think one of the reasons why people started telling stories with magic, well, first off, was, you know, like centuries or millennia ago, when people, you know, had these unexplained phenomena that were happening in the world. They wanted to explain them. So it's like, oh, there's lightning in the sky. That must be the god of thunder who is angry at us because we cooked this meat wrong or something, right?
Hold on. Yeah. Pause. Are you making fun of the god of thunder right now? Like, that's risky shit.
Yes, I am.
What if he listens to podcasts? Like, I don't want the god of thunder, like, smiting me.
We're fucked.
I have enough to deal with in quarantine right now without worrying about potential smiting.
Yeah, you know what? Then that now that you've said that, you're going to be fine. I'll take all the smiting from Thor and or Zeus. Okay.
Okay.
You're going to be fine. I'll take that lightning. I need a little bit of excitement in my life anyway.
Rock and roll. Yeah. Explaining of natural phenomena. Yeah, the idea of like magic as a proto science. Or this is not exactly what we're thinking about and talking about in this particular episode, but I think it's interesting that like thinking through at what point is that dividing line between science versus philosophy versus magic and theology and the soup of how many things, especially back in the day, like the scientific discoveries that come from philosophers who are thinking about things in a theological perspective and the fun soup that they all take towards trying to explain how the fuck does this crazy world work?
Yeah, which honestly, it was a bit lazy.
Shots fired. Shots fired. Pythagoras called the fuck out.
Yeah, man. You're a fucking idiot. God,
get
like
your shit right, Aristotle. Get on my level.
Is there just some like dude in the sky who's like, you know, shooting lightning at? That's what it is. Like, oh, bzz, that's what they did. I don't fucking know. Like, that's honestly what they said verbatim.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. We have the records. We have the tape. Yeah. We can play it back.
Exactly. But yeah, I mean, that was, I guess, the original. It wasn't for storytelling. It wasn't for creating this, a rich narrative or to like engage the reader or the audience. It was to literally, you know, I don't know, come up with scientific reasons, which I think is kind of bullshit.
Well, interesting. I might kind of push back on that, actually. And it's hard to tell how much of this is because, like, the early prototypical stories feature this, so we think of it as prototypical storytelling versus like it was them doing the same thing that we're trying to do now. But like, if you all like thinking about Greek myths, there's some of it that has an explanatory function, or fairy tales, or even like the hot water potentially myth, or the miracles and things that you read about in like the Bible, say. Now we'll whatever paper over the is that magic or not part question, whatever. But that there is still, I think, some narrative function, especially in some of the ones that are less explanatory, of if you, I think this is particularly true in a lot of religious texts where it's also trying to tell you like, this is so that you can learn how to you know, live a good life, or you can learn some other lesson that is not necessarily just like the explanation of how the natural world works. If that makes sense.
Think so. So it's like, I don't know, trying to, I guess, engage the audience to like,
yeah, I'm thinking about like parables and things like that, of like the again, hot water, whether you want to call this magic or not, but for the sake of conversation, like Jesus turning water into wine, or the multiplying of the loaves and fishes and things like that, where it's like those stories, you know, still several, well, were they several centuries after the Greeks? Maybe not. I don't know my ancient history well enough. Oh, dear. put me on blast, classicists. But that, like, using magic and larger than life and unexplainable phenomena and stuff like that, both for, I guess, well, okay, now that I'm saying this out loud, multiple different things. So there's the magic used as like explanation of the natural world and how does shit work that you really see a lot in those early Greek myths and early early Christian myths and things like that. There's also it from a like, we're doing this so that you can believe that our religion is great and you should follow our religion because look at all this cool magic shit that our religion does. That's wildly oversimplifying and probably offending a lot of people, but no one listens to us, so whatever.
Sure.
But then I think there is still the like third path of that, that it's, you know, using these larger than life stories, and I'm not a theologian or a religious historian, but I do think that from what I've heard, that even in the time of Jesus and stuff like that, there was some acknowledgement that some of these stories that are being told are deliberately exaggerated and deliberately going over the top because they tell you some other greater, quote unquote, greater truth about generosity, about morality, about you know, lessons you can learn from human behavior, which is interesting. I'm curious, from your "this is lazy, don't do it" perspective, does that apply both to using it as an explanatory thing to explain natural phenomena that science can then will explain centuries later?
Yeah,
same thing, versus using it for explanatory purposes, but explanatory purposes on things that are a little more like societal or moral or ephemeral or psychological.
Only scientific. I think for the other purpose, I think it is more trying to, I don't know, fool a population into having morals, like saying, oh, if you do this, you're going to be smited. If you don't do this, then you're going to, then that's good, or whatever, right? And these stories are there to exaggerate, to be like, oh, to instill fear in a god, for example, that if you go and murder the people, that you're going to be put into hell, for example. And I will very explicitly call that out as magic. I'm scared of no Christians, I guess.
Giant Stay Puffed Marshmallow Jesus coming to haunt you.
Zeus / Thor and all of Christianity. So come at me.
Interesting. Okay. So I still push back a little bit about that, but I think maybe that's the kind of pushback that will be interesting in comparison to some of the stuff that we talk about later throughout the genealogy of magic. Or I guess spoiler, in thinking through what makes some kinds of early magic stories different from some later kinds. Okay. So we have that old school why do you use magic? Use it to explain shit. Use it to cow a populace into believing in your theological and political regimes. What about then more modern stories?
Yeah. I would say one of the purposes is still kind of that generations old idea of trying to capture the unknown and trying to quantify it almost, and to give it this to put the unknown into humans' hands, kind of.
Okay. Well, do you have an example of that?
Sure. I mean, of just like, I don't know, any like Harry Potter being able to levitate someone, right? Of being able to create fire at the snap of your fingers.
Okay, wait. So interesting, actually.
What were your examples?
Well, so I was thinking about it still from the perspective of like the, or what I thought you were saying was more along like, you know, trying to explain the unknown in terms of like give the audience something to come away with, having some sort of understanding of the unknown in our, like the things that are unknown are fantastical in our world. And that was leading me towards things of like really in the same boat of Greek mythology, but just centuries later of like,
sure,
you know, 17th century fairy tales and King Arthur stories and things like that that are more modern, but not. Sure. Literally in this century. That's interesting. So dive a little bit more into actually on the Harry Potter example of like, what do you mean by explaining the unknown in the context of things like the levitation or the fire thing? Because I definitely don't think no one comes away from Harry Potter thinking, unless
magic.
You know, unless you literally are like seven and you know, you're willing to buy into that sort of stuff, you don't come away with it thinking that like, if I wave my wand in this way, oh great, you've explained to me how I can wave my wand and make the magic happen.
Yeah. I think I was jumping off of two different thoughts and kind of combined them and
okay.
Didn't fully hey. Think it through.
No rules, just no quarantine, no rules, just right.
Yeah. So yeah, not so much as like, these are things that you can do, but these are that stuff is more, I guess, a little bit about a combination of like wish fulfillment and I don't know, giving. I guess taking this. Well, now I actually am going to relate it back of taking this unknown of like these gods and this stuff like that, and taking that for ourselves. So kind of going back to these things that used to be explanations. We're now using them as like what if story points.
When you say what if story points, is that more to like provide access to a type of, you know, is it more for the like the thrill and the fun of like, holy shit, things that don't happen in the real world are happening in the story. That makes my story more exciting and more fun. Or is there something else there?
Yeah, absolutely. That, yeah.
Okay. So I'm interested. Maybe I think Harry Potter is a good example of like thinking through like it's hard to say because like it literally wouldn't be Harry Potter if there wasn't magic. It is so foundational to every single part of the story. But yeah. Like, what? Why have magic in Harry Potter? Like, what purpose does that serve for the story? What benefits do we get out of it? What things does J.K. Rowling use magic to be able to do that couldn't happen in a non-magical story?
Yeah. That's a very hard question.
Yeah. Some of it, this is fully thinking out loud, which is fun. That yeah. Like some of it definitely is that like, yo, cool shit's happening that doesn't happen in the real world. I'm seven. You're telling me that there's monsters and there's magic and there's levitation and stuff like that. That's cool. I want to read things that are cool.
Yeah.
I wonder though that like, part of it in the Harry Potter context, and I think part of what helps to its success is that it is one of those, like, the way that they use magic and the way they use magic specifically as a, there is an entire other magical world, and yeah. It's existing and, but separate from the world that you know, and it's hidden, and if you knew about it, you'd be able to do all this cool stuff, and that, like, the magic that you see in Harry Potter and in so many other Harry Potter ripoffs and follow-ons, I think some of it does come from that, like, like you were saying, wish fulfillment, but a different kind of wish fulfillment of the like, and this could be out there, or I feel like, you know, the world that I know is boring, but maybe there's a more special world out there. And I don't know, some level of that, like identification with the reader's mental state and the way they think about the world is reflected in the over the top setup of the world itself.
Yeah. And it's this ability to like put that world within the context of modern day, and not even just modern day, of like our existence as we know it, you know? So it's like there's something unique about using our own timeline and I don't want to say timeline, but like our own history, right?
Yeah.
And our own existence of humanity that is different when you compare it to like Lord of the Rings, for example, you know?
Okay. More to that. How so? How does Lord of the Rings use magic differently?
Yeah, first off, uses it differently is that it is integral to that world. It exists there, and it is known. It is a known quantity there that exists. Well, maybe not a completely known quantity, right? But people know of magic in that world, right? Versus Harry Potter or I don't know, Alice in Wonderland or Narnia. Those are all places where magic exists, but they're like hidden away in like secret corners of our own world, you know?
Yeah. Magic in that very much, among its other uses, serves as a metaphor for this sort of, this sort of self-discovery or discovery of a new world story, which is interesting also now that I'm thinking about it. I don't think it's a coincidence that all of those stories, if you also think about like Coraline and stuff like that, all of those stories feature young adults. They feature teens or preteens. That like it's as you are going and discovering the wild and wonderful rest of the world, that is what the story is that you fall into this magic world that is like ours but different and has all this fantastical element to it and this magical element versus like you were saying Lord of the Rings where it is the world is magic and you have to deal with that. Even there though, I think there is an element of in the way that the Hobbit specifically is structured, that the Shire is much less what we would consider quote unquote magical than the rest of the story. So there is still some element of like Frodo and Bilbo are going out on there. I fucked it up and said Frodo for the Hobbit, but whatever. Are going out on their adventure where they discover the more magic rest of the world.
Yes, but they still know of magic and they know that it is probably out there, but it's just not for us because we're wee little hobbits in our own little hobbit, you know, hills and stuff like that. I mean, I also think so there's that difference of wanting to tell a story that is about discovery and is about, I don't know, this better life for us that we have now that is like, oh, you know, in Harry Potter of like that's almost the basis of the entire story is he lives a shitty, shitty life. You know, he lives under the stairs with his aunt and uncle, blah, 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 blah. And then the most literal form of escapism ever, he escapes basically and like goes into this magical world. Like you cannot get a more basis of like, oh, escape from your own shitty reality kind of story. And then, you know, the story itself is kind of this adventure of like, oh, it turns out that, you know, even though this world is amazing and beautiful, it still has some issues as well. And you have to work through those as well, you know? Versus like Lord of the Rings is, I don't know, it's a completely different kind of story. It's not about escapism. It's not about him wanting to leave the Shire in order to go return the ring to Mordor or whatever. It's about, you know, being forced to do that and being pushed out. So something I do want to mention, though, about, I guess, so this difference of like, oh, being rooted in our own history and like Harry Potter, et cetera, all those. And there's a secret magical world within our own, right? Versus Lord of the Rings is even through that Lord of the Rings still uses a lot of our own, I guess, historical, like obviously not directly historical things, but it has to use our own narrative and our own tools to create that other world, right?
And actually more so than you might think, given that like explicitly a big part of this was J.R.R. Tolkien, I don't want to say J.K. Rowling, fun, J.R.R. Tolkien wanting to, like, he loved studying like ancient, not ancient, but like classic British myths and British history. And was like, I'm going to write my version of this. And kind of got into it from a linguistics perspective first of like, I'm going to write a language and I'm going to write the history of the people that go along with this language. And it's going to be very surprisingly similar to how we write about classical British history.
Yeah. And that's, I don't know, I think that's something important to, I guess, note in the difference between like these magical worlds. Like, even though it's still entirely created anew, it's yet still rooted in our own history.
And it's actually interesting on that note of thinking about like rooted in our own history, there's an element to any sort of magical story that part of what an author has to do in using magic in their story is reckon with the fact that magic is a thing that has been woven throughout our entire history of storytelling. That like a big part of the use of magic in Lord of the Rings is either a version of or a twist from the way magic was used in old fairy tales and old like mythology of old British mythology. Then if you also think about stories like Game of Thrones, where from the inception, the whole idea was let's comment on the way magic is used in Lord of the Rings specifically. Yeah. And then Lord of the Rings is commenting on how things are used everywhere else. And then presumably someone else will come around and say, hey, I want to comment on the way Game of Thrones uses magic and say that the final season sucked and write a many, many word blog post. And that will be the next great literary masterpiece in the canon of fantasy, is a dunk on Game of Thrones final season.
It's funny because there's actually one thing that I've been noticing a lot. So I'm rewatching Avatar: The Last Airbender, amazing, fantastic TV show. And the kind of basis for all of the nations in there are based off of real worlds. Like Earthbenders or the Earth Nation is basically China, kind of. The Fire Nation is basically Japan. Water tribes are Inuit. And then the Air Nation is, or Air Nomads, they're not a nation technically, are based off like Buddhist monks. But even the magic that's in those worlds isn't even, I guess, integral. That's not true. It is definitely integral. It's just not, it doesn't influence it in the same way. Like these nations are based off of real world nations that we have today, or not today, but like in the 1500s or 1400s or whatever time period it's based off of. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's not so much about like, oh, what nations were created from these from this magic, right? It's not like how did earthbending affect the influence of creating China, right? Like, sure, there are absolutely, and like it does this in two ways. Like on a grand scale, it sets them as these nations and kind of these parodies of the real world, right? And then on a much smaller scale, it does do this. So like there is like one city called Omashu that is entirely based off of earthbending. And it's like that's kind of the whole structure of like how it was created. Like that's where roots were, is between these like two feuding cities or whatever, right? So it's kind of this interesting mix of like, even though the world building in that is beautiful and amazing and I love the TV show, when you really think about like, okay, how would magic in that world affect reality? You start to realize that, oh, maybe these nations would be a whole lot different than what we see on the TV show. But for the sake of narrative storytelling, we're going to make them more, you know, something related to like Asian cultures in general.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. I think that I think that, so again, you're going to get mad. I have never seen Avatar: The Last Airbender.
Better watch it if it's on Netflix, okay?
Yeah. Anyway, we'll just glide on past that. I do want to watch it at some point. I just have never gotten around to it. The way you were describing it, I was thinking about it in the sense of like magic, the at least in terms of sort of the structure of the world building, that like magic allows for a sort of heightened metaphorical version of some core ideas of this, in this case, because it's a story that's kind of loosely based or playing with the idea of Asian history over the last millennia.
I mean, the Fire Nation is, you know, Japan, and it's all about like totalitarian, or not totalitarian, but like, oh, of like crushing their enemies. And kind of there was a point in Japan's history where they were definitely conquerors, and like that's the Fire Nation.
Yeah. So what I was getting at is I think that like it's, even if it's not necessarily played out to this fullest extent, there's an element of, from what you were describing, using magic as the heightened way to explore the thing that we're interested in exploring in this story, which in this case is the political interactions between these different imperial powers, and the way that the magic is constructed in this story is constructed in a way to help let us tell that story in a fun and heightened and interesting way. And then on top of that, it also then, because of the thing that happens in this world on a micro level, we can then use that for specific beats and specific moments and opening up new story ideas and stuff like that. Where the reason I was sort of framing it like that is I think that that actually is an interesting kind of big meta use of magic. I think there's a ton of stories that do this where it's like, we use magic and we use a specific flavor of magic that we're going to construct in such a way that it unlocks a heightened version of a central metaphor that we want to play with, if that makes sense. And it would be great if I had examples. But does that make sense as like a broad concept?
Yeah. Maybe I do feel like I mischaracterized a little bit of the terms of Avatar. I feel like they more like, yes, they have these nation states, and I feel like they fit the elements into those nations just to be like, oh, we have this concept of earth, water, earth, air, and firebenders, and we want to assign those to nations. And then they also wanted to tell this bigger story of you know, Japan conquering parts of China and getting into war and stuff like that.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's less about like the magic represents each nation, like earthbending in China. I mean, there's not really anything specific about earthbending in China that I, you know, associate, or firebending in Japan, or airbending in Buddhist monks.
Okay,
but it's a fascinating show for a lot of reasons, for like just what each. I don't know. I'm kind of getting outside of the context of what I was talking about before, of just like what each magic represents for each person, like how each bender is affected by it. Like there's the main character, Aang, who he's an airbender, and he's always talked about how his main method of attacking isn't to attack. He's always about redirecting energy, and he's always about kind of dodging and like not getting hit. And like when you think of airbending, like, is that the first thing that really comes to your mind? Maybe not really, but it's just, I don't know, each of these different magics kind of embodies what their elements are, which I thought is just some random cool thing about my favorite TV show I wanted to share.
Nice. Nice. Love to see it. So if we think about all the stuff we talked about so far, why use magic in your story? Bunch of different answers. Magic as explaining the natural world, magic as justifying a religious theocracy, magic as hey, here's a brave new world, and look at you, young adult, don't you want to go explore a brave new world? I guess we did also then talk about, in general, magic as, hey, it's cool shit that doesn't happen in the real world, it's more exciting to read something that has cool shit happening than to have something that doesn't have cool shit happening. Magic as a way to interact with the fact that magic is in all of our stories before and the way magic is in part of our history, and then sort of interact with those big historical concepts. I think there's one other sort of version of the magic as cool shit thing, which we don't need to talk about too much because I definitely know that you don't love to dive into it as much, which is magic as big, scary, unknowable shit that makes your scary horror stuff.
I think that can be a very good topic.
Because, like, holy shit, magic stuff is a really easy way to make stuff. Like, there's plenty of horror that you can generate from the real world or a slightly exaggerated version of the real world, which is what I would call, like, slasher movies and stuff like that. Or, like, it's not real, but it's, like, plays within the realm of quote-unquote realism, even if it's very, very heightened. And then there's, like, horror stuff that is monsters or is, like, especially Lovecraft stuff, where the whole point is you don't know this shit. It's unknowable. It will break your brain if you try to know it. And that, like, magic as something that doesn't exist in our world makes a very easy leap to say, not only does it not exist, but it doesn't exist, and it's fucking scary, and it's going to kill you. So have fun with that, scared children and adults.
Yeah. I don't know how we get into the horror genre, but we can try.
Yeah. I mean, there's the classic stuff of the monsters, and some of that I think is just sort of inherent, like monster movie stuff and old, like even going back to like fairy tales and stuff like that. Some of that I think is just, if you're doing something, you're doing something unreal and you're heightening it so much so that there is this great thing to overcome. And it's like, the magic of it all allows it just to be larger than life. And I think that's actually a lot of the way that magic, the horror tinged elements of magic is used in like Harry Potter or in Lord of the Rings or something like that, where it's like, we're just leaning on the gas pedal for magic because it means that it can be even bigger and scarier than it would have been otherwise, if that makes sense. I don't know. Any thoughts on that other than scary shit that now is fake and fantasy and magic is even scarier?
I mean, it's just the general unknown. Like,
yeah.
What does magic represent in that case? Magic represents the unknown, right?
Yeah. Cool. Any other types of stories that use magic in other types of ways beyond the stuff we've been talking about?
I was thinking a little bit about Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah.
And just like the absurdity of it and like the point of magic in Alice in Wonderland is like to be unpredictable and to be just fucked up.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's just kind of a different take of magic that we've had. You know?
Yeah, and that's interesting. And that's actually, I think, sort of similar to it, or it's a different flavor of a similar impulse that I think you see in both the Harry Potter young adult stories of like discovery. It's a new world, like, and a new world that is different from our world today. And in some of the Lovecrafty type things, caveat, I actually haven't read a ton of Lovecraft, but at least I can pretend like I know enough about it to be able to spout nonsense. Yeah. I've read enough Wikipedia summaries of like, not only is everything so different, but it's so different and unknowable that your brain will explode, that this is like, things are really different and they're silly and they're over the top and they're, you know, nonsensical. And in all, like, each three of those, I can kind of see as like different flavors and takes on the same fundamental premise of, here's a part of the world. Here's a reflection of the world that is different but similar in interesting ways to the world that you exist in now.
Yeah.
We'll see how I handle the edit to this. Either this is me introducing an idea or this is me saying, hey, I finally found an example of the kind of shit that forgot I couldn't think of earlier. But I think broadly speaking, the idea of like, you know, what magic can give you is it can give you something big, something heightened, something unreal, but, you know, fun to play off of. And I think the way different stories that use magic in more specific ways or use magic in more limited ways. Oftentimes they will construct a system of magic or use a magical thing, whether it's like a creature or whatever, to as part of their central metaphor to unlock the kind of story that they want to tell. And I couldn't think of any examples before, which was unfortunate. But I think like that, especially in the horror context, in the monster context, you see that a lot around like, what are the central metaphors of the monsters that we're talking about? So like the Dracula story as like an old classic version of it, of like, oh, we are going to create a specific type of mythical monster that follows all these magical rules. And a big part of it is like, this reflects fears of romanticism and of classical romanticism and of sexuality, and also some sorts of elements of fears of colonialism and things like that. Or like It Follows is a more modern example of similarly sexually transmitted diseases as metaphors, but like we're going to create a magical monster and the rules of this magical monster are a direct metaphor for sexually transmitted diseases and the horrors that that can take out on people. But now we're going to make it magical, but literal, rather than just have it be like a regular old story about a regular old person that has to deal with something shitty.
Oh, yeah. Just taking metaphors for real life and making them magic.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I think, so I used a couple horror examples right there, but I think my guess is, and if I could think of more examples, that would be great. Probably any sort of story that you find that uses magic in a very narrow or very limited way, like they introduce only one kind of magical creature, or they have magic, but magic has all of these rules on top of it. Probably you could do a pretty easy analysis of the way that magic is structured in the story and what benefits that gives in terms of like a central metaphor or a central dramatic question that the author is using magic to explore.
Yeah.
How about another story that uses magic that is not, well, maybe it's a fantasy story, maybe it's not. Why would you want to have so much magic in Star Wars? What does that give you?
Yeah. I think the concept of having magic in Star Wars is beautiful and amazing. I'm still forming my thoughts around this. Why do you think they have magic in Star Wars?
It's interesting. I mean, this actually could be a fun sort of summation of a lot of the stuff that we talked about before. A part of it is George Lucas was trying to reckon with and comment on and synthesize different genres that he loved. And some of those genres included genres and philosophies that he loved. And some of those included a lot of thinking through like Eastern mysticism and things like that.
Yeah.
Is a big influence. So some of it is sort of similar to the thing that we were talking about with Lord of the Rings and Game of Thrones. You want to comment on and incorporate part of your own history and lineage where magic already existed. Is part of it, but I definitely don't think that's all of it.
Yeah, I think another part of it is kind of just the concept of, destiny and storytelling. And like, whenever force is used, at least in the original prequels, it is heavily used at moments of significance. And it's used in a way that feels very precious and feels very... It makes it feel like it's important and significant.
And actually, that got me thinking, to your point around it being used at like moments of significance, at like precious moments, those significant precious moments are, especially in like the big climactic scenes of the original trilogy, they are moments where Luke has to go take a leap of faith and really ties into like...
using your emotions and to using your stuff like that for getting stuff done, which I think is beautiful.
And is a thing that sets it apart from other the ability to use the force as this mystical magical part of your story allows for the four moments like that and allows you to tell a science fiction story that is fundamentally about having faith in a higher power than yourself, even if that, in this case, higher power is the energy that binds the universe, yeah, rather than like a specific god or what have you.
Something else I want to mention about Star Wars is there's the interesting difference between the prequels and sequels is the use of the Force. In the prequels, the Force is everywhere, and like the Jedi Council, well, first off, exists, and secondly, people use Force all the time. Versus in the sequels, like Han Solo does, or in the sequels, Han Solo doesn't believe in the Force. He doesn't think that it exists at all, which I think is a very interesting different take on the two different worlds and kind of what it, accomplishes.
Yeah. Yeah. It has, it's a similar flavor to the way magic works in Lord of the Rings and Game of Thrones, even more so than Lord of the Rings, of like the, did magic exist? Maybe, maybe not. Maybe it's all a whole bunch of bullshit. Maybe it like a similar feeling to how like we would think about magic, especially like classical magic today, of that was all a whole bunch of bullshit that we made. We talked about it at the beginning of this episode. That magic stuff was all bullshit that was made up to either justify a religious theocracy or to explain science to people who didn't understand science yet.
Yeah.
And then the Star Wars movies sort of say, you know what? Or again, the original trilogy and to a lesser extent the sequels sort of say, you know what? Maybe not. You can go ahead and believe that, but guess what? Take a leap of faith, run out, and you will be rewarded with great magical force powers.
Yeah.
Which is why we are saying, and this is the official note of the ADUB Club, that magic is real. You should, but the only way that you're going to be able to get magic is by swearing your fealty to the ADUB Club, to us, sending us a lot of money, and that will allow you to unlock all of your magical powers that you may think don't exist. But that's just society, man. You're Harry Potter in the cupboard right now. You haven't even opened your eyes yet. You haven't gotten your letter.
I'm gonna send you these small square papers, and you need to put them under your tongue, and then in about an hour or so you'll be able to firebend.
Yep. That'll be good. I thought you were going to say, I'm going to send you a whole bunch of owls, which that's what I'm going to do. I'm just going to find a bunch of owls and I'm going to send them to you. And then that's your problem to deal with.
I got too many owls, y'all. Like
too many owls. So cool. Why use magic in your stories? Answer, whole bunch of cool reasons. Magic's neat. Probably don't just use it for like magic is cool and I want to use magic. You should probably think a little bit more about that. Otherwise your story is probably going to suck, but you know, you do you.
It needs to have some literary reason.
Yeah. And it turns out there's a lot of them.
Yeah, fuck them.
If you want to learn the secret to magic and get just so many owls sent to your house, then you should follow us and subscribe to us wherever you find podcasts, whether that is Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or Spotify. It's hard to find us if you search for us, but whatever. You can also find us then if you're having trouble searching for us at our website, theadub.club. That's theadub.club. There you can find our topics guide, where we list out all the various episodes that are on various topics. And this one you can find under things like magic, narrative, and all of the like 400 billion different things that we name checked once or twice over the course of this episode. That'll be fun to tag. You can also find us on Twitter at theadubclub. That's theadubclub. And then you can, complain or give us suggestions for other topics. You can also do that via email at theawclub@gmail.com. That's theawclub@gmail.com. And that is everything.
ADUB Club out.
ADUB Club out.
And we're going to have to pause for a second because New York City is about to be very loud for 5 minutes.
Oh. Yeah, we're doing that. Yeah, we do it at 8 here.
Okay.